concerted, planned out effort that you see. Okay, so this is why Trump started talking about right away at the beginning of his campaign. One of the first things he did is started calling Mexicans rapists.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Over time, his language in every single speech that had to do with immigration was dehumanizing. That's not accidental. That is the slow revealing of this dehumanizing language that over time, if we don't fight it, does something to our brains, which makes us think that those people, whether it's subconscious or unconscious, are less human.
Yeah.
And so then we are able to stomach, to tolerate treating them in a less human way, but it is a concerted campaign.
I ran around in circles, think I made myself dizzy. I slept it away, I sexed it away.
Hey everyone, welcome back. I've absolutely on purpose taken some time off. As I've shared with you before, I have been experiencing and have been trying to, I guess, reconcile a lot of past trauma, and one of them being racial trauma. And then the protesting of George Floyd happened, and I was really had to deal with some issues that I have not dealt with, and some of the racial trauma that I've experienced, not only in the States, but also here in New Zealand, and trying to really create space for myself, make sure that I was okay, making sure that my mental health was great. There's some other factors around that as well. My personal life is a little crazy. My family, members of my family in my New Zealand side are having some strong health challenges, and I'm trying to make my way on how to balance all of it, how to get back to work, how to actually really concentrate on things that make me happy and start to vibrate really, really high. And it's really hard to do that when things that are negative are happening around you, and you have no control. So I'm a type A personality. I do not say that with pride at all. I really wish I wasn't. And I have that control sort of mechanism around me all the time. And I'm learning how to actually take away from that. And it took me a while to sit on this podcast that I'm going to be sharing with you. I'm calling it Our Collective Grief. And it really is about how, and I seem to always get it caught up into two things. Before, when I used to talk about racism when I was in my 20s, 30s, and even, you know, now in my 40s, I would say stuff like, oh, well, you know, people of color have a great responsibility in making sure when they say that something or someone is racist, that we need to be very careful about saying that. That is absolutely not my opinion anymore. I'm 100% actually probably changing that. What I think when I say something like that is that, A, I'm going into my old pattern of coming with receipts to trying to prove that racism exists. I'm no longer doing that. The second part is that when I'm coming over there and trying to be persuasive, it's actually draining a lot of energy from me, and my not only well-being, but it's very hard to talk to people that you appreciate, that you respect, and sometimes even in your own family, that yes, racism exists. I am married to somebody who's Caucasian, and therefore this conversation is always going on in my house, always. And you know, I get impatient when things don't click as quickly for my husband, but he's been very patient, been learning and been on a journey with me and going through all of this and seeing how it affects me. And it's been very difficult. I know that I was going to cry a little bit. So boy, does this episode have a lot of crying. But I wanted to absolutely don't make excuses about not airing this one, because it's really important. And even if you somehow listen to my podcast and you've been listening for a while, I want you to see how heavy this is. And although I am not African American and do not have that experience, I absolutely still, because being a person of color in the States or abroad, it's not just the States. And I really want to bring that home, because it could be anywhere in the world. People have ideas, stereotypes, the way they treat you when they find out what your nationality is, and it is ongoing. A part of that is because, well, we're exposed to a lot. We have a lot of Western television as well. So preconceived ideas of race in the world as a citizen is very impactful, especially as you almost feel like I'm in a magnifying glass while I am living somewhere outside of the States. It's a bit more of a focal point where they want to figure you out, and they want to figure out why Americans are the way they are, and they want to figure out what your perspective is as a person of color. And it's heavy. So I am happily airing this episode. It's taken me quite a while. I believe it's about 3 weeks old. I had to step away from it. I need to push through this because I'm also going to be really documenting what I want to do with my business and how important it is to actually get started on that journey and release this part of my 2020. So to speak. So, and so then I can move forward and I can actually rename and go and, you know, to a new season and start creating what I really want to create, what I feel is impactful, and how I would like you, if you're along this entrepreneurial journey as well, how you can take some of the tips that I know that work and go forward. I'm not saying I'm forgetting. I'm not saying that I'm not going to be talking about these issues in further podcasts, because I know that I will. As a woman of color, if things in the news are impactful or impact me, or are places where trauma is actually brought up again, racial trauma in particular, I will be addressing it, but I'm also going to be doing it and pushing through my business cycle and how I do it. I think it's important. I think it's really important for you to hear people of color still going through the day-to-day activity, the day-to-day business development, the day-to-day development and creation of something that you want to put forward, and seeing what the impact of all of this has I guess, stirred my journey, and what's more important and what is important, and how I take care of myself during this. And I think that that's something that we really need to document. So unapologetically, here is the next episode. So here we go. Episode 42, The Collective Racial Trauma. Hello there. How are you? Listen, I haven't been on for a long time. A lot of it has to deal with just recovering from the trauma. And I can't even say recovering because it's ongoing. There's a lot of racial trauma that I've expressed in previous podcasts before. I'm in the thick of it. I'm probably in a space now where I can talk about it and my voice will crack, but I'm not breaking down. So this is why I'm here. I've had a very challenging time being away from the States and not being amongst it and not protesting in the streets of Los Angeles, where I'm from. This is a very, visceral, awful, toxic, choking feeling that I'm feeling about what's going on in the US. And it's just, I mean, I'm still finding the words. And I think what I did, maybe it's a generational thing, I'm not sure, but the first thing that I did was I started to research. It's almost like, as a person of color, you have to come with receipts to prove racism, right? So I'm just looking at all the stuff, and I'm following the right people on Instagram, and I'm looking at all the Black Lives Matter people. And I'm actually going to put in the show notes of who I'm following, and I think that you should follow. And there's also some complexity to it. Since I'm Native Mexican American, half of the United States was Mexico at some point. So we're having to battle people telling us to go home while this was home. This is home. We've never moved. That part. Also, learning how to be an ally to the Black Lives Matter movement. Work, to be frank, we need to get Black Lives Matter right for us to move forward as a people. As people of color, we need to get the Black Lives Matter correct. We need to show up as strong allies. We need to have Black Lives leadership happen. It's hard for me because I find myself in a strong leadership position when I speak. I want to be a leader for my generation, for my race, for my LGBTQ plus community. This is me, and I'm learning how to use that voice in a way that is meaningful. I'm also very touched and upset that there's not more Latin people out there understanding how important Black Lives Matter is. This is like, it's like the hot point. It's the start of everything that we have seen that has made us sick as a nation, and how we've turned the other way when really we need all hands on deck on this. So that's the American side of me, right? And I am a Kiwi as well. So with that said, I'm seeing a lot of news reports out there that, oh gosh, look at them. Wow, that's them. Well, it's not us. And I don't understand why colonialism sort of skipped the minds and the attitudes of white Kiwis. Of New Zealanders that are white do not recognize that the reason that they're here is from their British heritage. And very similarly, they've done to New Zealand what they've done in the States. And they've taken stuff over and just taken it. Taken a land from its people. And so what I did, because I know these are harsh and visceral words for people, what I did is I just dived into news articles after news articles. I didn't have to go that far. Like, I have my iPhone open here with all of these news articles that are relevant in New Zealand, you know, and they're quite shocking. It's like, I have a News Hub article here. David Seymour says Black Lives Matter protests, a slap in the face for businesses that closed during lockdown. So we all have our opinions about that guy. It's awful. And then you see other things, like examples of what, white privilege is in New Zealand. Unpunished Christchurch schoolgirl escapes conviction after broken bottle stabbing. She stabbed someone with a broken bottle. And I don't even have to know that this judge probably thinks that she has a whole life ahead of her. So why would we do that to her? What do we do to our brown people, our native brown people here, when an incident like that happens? Do you see what I'm saying? Do you even see how this goes? it's hard to see. Another headline, this is from Stuff, .co.nz. Trump has turned America into a pitiful pariah. Okay, that's one way to look at it. But it's so like, you know, let's talk about the issues. And it's just a refusion just refuses to look at what the actual meaning is, or the baseline of where this all comes from, and how we together as a world, as citizens of the world, how we have to unlearn, you know, racism. And it is across the way. It's across Britain. I just have to bring up Meghan Markle and know what they did to her. Like, it's just really subtle, quiet racism that I've been dealing with. And I feel like it's a slight British culture over here in New Zealand, but it's just, I'm worried that we're not looking at the issue. And I'm still scrolling through a lot of different articles. I mean, prayers and a punch up out of culture wars come to New Zealand. So Black Lives Matter issue comes to New Zealand. So there's an incident of a church somebody that had came in, a congregant was wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt, and they decided that this is the time to in church to go ahead and duke it out and have punches over it, because that stuff belongs in the States and it doesn't belong here. So racism again doesn't belong here, which is great. And that's something falling in the kitchen in the background. And I have all these other articles, you know, whether or not to pull down statues here, you know, students and how they're dealing with racism here. It's just not good enough. And so I'm kind of getting piled on, like, on these two sides. So I have the U.S. side, and I turn on the news and find out what's going on. Of course, you know, number 45 is going to be asinine and say something so totally stupid, and really fueling the race war. The unrestlessness is because of the unacknowledgement of what is happening. And I say to you, New Zealand, that very much could be us. We're smaller, but we do have dynamics that are very American here. We do have that racism of people turning away and saying, no, that's not us, that's not our country, that's not who we are. But I will tell you, living here, working here, I have been personally affected by racism and sexism. A lot of incidents have happened, and I've talked about them here. I haven't talked about every single thing. I haven't laundry listed everything that I hear, but I will tell you that it's alive and well. I will tell you that I feel responsible if I have a junior underneath me and they're exposed to that, and they have to deal with that. And now that is a trauma, a work trauma for them to try to figure out. It's you know, there was a time I was a recruiter here, and they would call PLUs. We want more PLUs in our company. Well, PLUs is people like us. All right, people like us. What does that mean? And I think we all know what that means, don't we? I think we all know what all of that is. So my challenge is to make room for voices. Don't cut people down and say, no, it's not. We're not racist. That's absolutely unfair. As a Caucasian person are not at liberty to discern what is racist, what is not. You are not the person that is affected by it. So therefore, you cannot judge that. You can't say it isn't when it is. And I think that if anything comes from this podcast, that's what I really, really want to take home, because I am having a lot of trouble being here at the moment with every time we talk about race issues and people are curious. And I'm actually happy to take that on. I know that we're not supposed to ask people of color, especially Black people, on what's with all this racism nonsense, because that is traumatizing. But I'm letting you know that I'm here for it in a constructive way, in a respectful way, because I am absolutely curious. That probably the same amount of curiosity that you have about why is this racism going on, I have the same amount of curiosity on why you don't see it. Why don't you think it's a problem? Why don't you say something when an inappropriate comment is made, or joke, or making light and saying something that you think is like, oh, we're going to make fun of Americans when we're going to say this in this large business meeting? and we're going to say something like, you know, make America great again. Look who's in the room. Read the room. My God, read the room. All of those Trump jokes are white supremacy jokes. That's it. So anytime you bring up a Trump joke, it is a white supremacist joke. I'm not laughing. I might be laughing at it, trying to get myself out of it, trying to make light of it so we can all move on. But it is a lot to take on. It's enough. It's way enough. And I look and think and see all of the social media and seeing people out in the streets, out in the front lines, protesting, people being angry, people my age being so upset and tired. Well, I'm so upset and tired that in my lifetime, this is the second riot that is happening in my lifetime because we didn't get in the 90s. We did not get it. And now there's so much work that has done that we've done. And I don't even really look at my generation. I look at the younger generation of what they're doing. They're not having it. And thank God. Thank God that they're not having it. We need more of that. And we as people of an older generation, Gen Xers, even older boomers, we need to make room for them to hear what the youth is talking about and what they need to bring to the table, and their feelings are effing valid. And we need to hear them out, and we should not shout down on them. There's two perspectives that older generations do. One is the white perspective of saying, it's not happening, you're sensitive. And the second bit is from people of color that are older generation and saying, honey dear, it's always going to be like this. There's no use in talking about it. There's absolutely use in talking about it. We cannot shut our youth up. We cannot not validate them. They are the people that are going to make the next generation breathe. And I mean that from all sense of the word. We need to actually make room for this. And if you have an issue with it, and I think that a lot of people, as they are talking about this, and yeah, this is supposed to be a marketing podcast, but guess what? I am here for this because it's affecting me. And I will not apologize for that. I challenge more marketers, the people that have platforms that have hundreds and thousands of people following them. Why aren't you talking? Why aren't you saying something? Why aren't you using your platform instead of selling your whatever? Why aren't you talking about this? And I don't mean that you shouldn't sell or you shouldn't work. That's fine. We all have to do it. And quite frankly, there's some great things that have come out of it because I've seen people that are doing the positive work as well in the marketing space. What gets me is that there are people of color in this marketing space that are not stepping up and voicing out what we need to do as a people. There is a reckoning going on. And we need to have all hands on deck. And it really disturbs me that I see more white allies than I see people of color allies right now. And I follow everybody. I am curious to see what's going on. And maybe it's one mention or one email of, ooh, what's next? Well, I need to learn a lot. And it's so drab. But the people that are doing the work, and I will name them, I think people that are doing the work is Kate Northrup. I mean, I've really found her podcast, her work on talking about racism, really inspirational. She's putting herself out there. And it's really soothing, to be honest, because she's not letting herself off the hook. She understands that things are going to be imperfect and that she needs to go through it. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, because she is having some, a lot of light bulb moments of things that she didn't see that were affecting her. And I think it's brilliant. I see James Wedmore stepping up as well, really out there speaking about it.
And it's inspiring when you have people that have huge platforms that are actually doing and saying something. I need more of that. And I'm not just talking people from marketing, but I'm just talking to people in business. There's a movement right now, little micro movements of how people are trying to change up their attitudes. And one of them is L'Oreal, which I think is laughable because I've always seen them misstep and firing, and I can't think of her name is because I'm so emotional right now, of firing somebody that about 5 or 7 years ago was talking about racism and brought it to their attention, and then they fired that person. They rehired them back. Purely a PR move, but they're always known for stupid PR moves that are just the day of, as we remember this particular, awareness holiday, we're going to go ahead and do this, you know, spend this kind of money on an ad, with an agency to show that we're all in. It's like, oh, can't stand that company. Sorry. Just, I can't. There are companies like Ben and Jerry's who's doing amazing work and is not apologizing for their stance on being an anti-racist company. We need more of that. If you have a small company like me, I've got a really tiny company. We need to do that together. We need to say we're an anti-racist company together. If you lose followings, who the fuck cares? All right. Who the fuck cares if you're losing followings? I will tell you, I've lost a lot of people on Instagram, but for me personally, it feels lighter. It feels good. I am so glad people disagree with me, with Black Lives Matter. I'm so glad that they're out of my audience. I don't want them there. I don't want to fight on my timeline every time I post something. And there are people that are still doing it. I've deleted them. I'm not having it. I just want all of those people gone. And I want only the good people that are willing to do the work. And, you know, I'm going to say here, as a person of color, I have a lot of work that I need to do. I have a lot of unlearning I need to do. The Latin community, our news channels are so one-sided and actually help perpetuate racism towards Black people. I need to unlearn a lot of that. I need to speak up when I see something like that. I also need to speak up when I see other Latin people not punching their weight. We need to come up with this. If it wasn't for the Black Civil Rights Movement, we wouldn't have immigration progress in the 60s. We owe them that. They literally are the source of what equality is. And we can't remember that. We can't remember that. Because we let those stupid jokes go by. And people say stupid things. And I'm guilty of that too. What are we going to do and change it now? How are we going to move ahead and do this correctly? And if we get it wrong, so what? We dust ourselves up and we just know that, yes, I made a mistake, but I'm committed to practicing anti-racism. And that's what I really want you to think about now. Please come back to me and tell me how you're going to do this, because this would actually really, really be a gift if you can actually tell me how you're committed to being anti-racist. And it could be the smallest thing, and one of those small things, they all build up to be a big thing. We have a lot of work to do. It's not just going to be a couple of months and we're gone. This is a generational thing. We all have to do it. We all have to put each other on check, and it's painful. And I will say it's really painful for me as well. My husband's Caucasian. My husband is in law enforcement. This is challenging for me too. But we need to have those uncomfortable conversations so we can progress. And I invite you to progress too. And that's it. That's all I have to say for this one, for this session. Listen, thank you for listening. I do want to do a little bit of a series on what anti-racism can look like. Getting people on the show and talking about this in greater detail. Understanding. But one thing that I will do is I absolutely know that I will be making mistakes during this. And it's about a process. And it's also about really getting that collective resilience around this racial trauma. Because there is racial trauma. And there's also a lot of revelations for people that are really owning their DNA and understanding what part they have in racism as well. And I acknowledge that. If you acknowledge that, that's half the work. So there you go. Thank you so much for listening, and we will listen to you and your responses and let me know what's going on in your head after listening to this, and we'll just take it from there.
Watchers care a lot about this because the dogs, when they're not on leashes, they go after the birds, and that's a real issue.
I know you speak for bird watchers yes. everywhere, but I mean, based on that video, he looks totally reasonable and rational. She looks irrational during that, but did she have to surrender the dog back to the shelter? I mean, isn't that seems like an awfully stringent repercussion of this little squabble. We will follow the developments for you.